Is the earth flat or round? What do you suppose? I think most of you here would say it's round. The earth is round. But why do you believe it's round? I suspect that most of us here couldn't actually answer that question or make much of an argument for why the earth is round. It's just something we take as a given. It's certainly not self-evidently true that the earth is round. Our typical experience in our daily lives is that the earth is flat. And that's why all ancient cultures believed the earth was flat. That was a logical inference from experience. Let me ask you this. Does the earth circle around the sun, or does the sun circle around the earth? Just remember, we say sunrise and sunset, and we talk about the sun traveling through the sky. So which is it? Does the sun circle the earth, or does the earth circle the sun? If you went back 1,000 years in time and you got into a conversation with someone from that age, could you show them that in fact it's the earth that goes around the sun? Would you have an argument for them that would prove to them that in fact it truly is the earth going around the sun in spite of the common self-evident experience of the reverse? So let me ask again, why do you suppose the earth is round? Why do you suppose that the earth does go around the sun and not the reverse? You probably haven't really thought about this very much. I can tell you that I haven't, really. It's just a given. We just take it as a fact. We probably have never thought about how one might go about proving such a fact to others. We've never needed to. We believe the earth is round, and we believe the earth goes around the sun because that's what we've been taught. We trust in the witness of others who know more than we do. We trust certain authorities in our culture, in our education. We take their assurances as foundations for many of our beliefs. Our beliefs are usually signals of who we trust and who we believe. It can be very disconcerting to get into a conversation with a flat earther, because they've done a lot more thinking about this matter than we have, about whether the earth is round or flat. They've done a lot more thinking than you and I have. They've worked out the arguments in much greater detail than you and I have. Most of us have never really had to think about it very much. I've noticed this with vaccine skeptics too. They're usually more informed on the subject than I am about vaccination. They know more about the material than I do. We might question where they get their information from, but I feel kind of helpless with them when I get into an argument about whether one should take the COVID vaccine or not. See, because I'm quite happy to take the advice of public health and leave it at that. And they're not. And I would suggest that in many, many areas of life, we can only function because we have some basic trust in what we've been told, what we've been taught. Because you can't master every facet of life. It's not possible to know every facet of every aspect of life. So you're going to have to trust somebody somewhere along the line. I certainly can't be informed on every important facet of my life in sufficient detail to be informed or to make a sufficient argument to prove what I believe. And I suspect neither can you. It's just not possible. So when my auto mechanic calls and tells me that I need a new alternator, what am I to do? How could anyone really know? I know what an alternator does, but what an alternator is, I'm not really that up on it. And I certainly don't have the diagnostic tools or the diagnostic experience or the diagnostic wisdom to know whether or not I really need an alternator in my car or not. So what's my option? Well, I've got to trust my auto mechanic, trust in his skill as a mechanic. Back in 2017, Harvey Weinstein was accused by several women of sexual harassment and sexual assault. Now, I never pay much attention to the beginning of movies when it lists out the production company. Does anybody really pay attention to that? But he actually turned out to be a major film producer in Hollywood. And in simple terms, the simple part of the story is that he leveraged his position of power and influence in the film industry to coerce women into non-consensual sexual relationships with him. If you wanted to get a part in his film as a woman, and you were, and he was interested in you, he would force you to have non-consensual sexual relations with him to get the part. And if you refused, well, too bad for you. And the whole edifice of his scheme burst in October 2017, when articles in the New Yorker and the New York Times came out accusing Weinstein of being a serial rapist. And more than a dozen women came forward in the article detailing his assaults upon them. And this was just the tip of the iceberg. Over time, an avalanche of accusations came out against him, and this avalanche spawned the Me Too movement. That's only like 5-6 years ago. The Me Too movement was an outward pouring in which women described their own experiences of sexual abuse. It happened to you, me too. And this moment created an international movement when the outpouring of such anger and grief came to the surface, from women feeling profoundly sexually exploited by mostly men in positions of power. Not exclusively men, but mostly men. Interestingly, Weinstein got 40 consecutive years in prison, so he's never going to get out alive. But let me ask you this, seriously. Why is it wrong for a person, anyone, a man or a woman, to use their positional power and influence to get what they want? To exploit the powerless of others for their own benefit? We might agree that it's wrong. I suspect everyone here would agree that it's wrong, but why is it wrong? I knew a father who would cheat at board games with his young children. Think about that. He cheated at board games with his young children. His attitude was, if you let me cheat, it's your fault, not mine. If you don't know the rules well enough to catch me cheating, that's your problem, not my problem. He took that approach with his young kids. Think about that. Now, is that wrong? Of course it's wrong, but why is it wrong is a deeper question to me. We agree that this attitude of this father goes against our basic assumptions about how people should treat each other, about how parents should treat their children. Fair enough, but why is what he did wrong? Why is it wrong for him to exploit his superior position of power and knowledge and experience to gain an advantage in his game playing with his kids? See, because in truth, people use their positional advantage in life all the time. We all do it. We've all had it done to us. To get what we want, to have others get what they want through us. I've got several books in my library about how to influence people to get what you want. There is manipulation going on all the time in life. Everyone leverages their power to get their needs met. It happens in every relationship, and it's not just people. It happens in institutions, businesses do it. There's a lot in the news recently about supermarket companies, food companies. There's unions do it, even churches can do it. Now, I suppose we could argue that it's a matter of degree. Up to a point, it's okay to leverage your power, but for what you want. You can leverage your power for your needs and your wants, but after a certain point, it becomes demonic or oppressive. So tell me, where's the line? Where do you draw the line? Putin invaded Ukraine. He used his positional power as president of Russia to harness the full power of Russia's military might so that he could impose his will on another people. He obviously sees no compelling reason not to do so. In fact, he sees it is his right to do so. Why shouldn't he do it? And sometimes I think people are constrained not by morality, but by the limits of their power. Their means are limited. We're limited by how much power we have, not by moral or other considerations. That's what keeps us in line in life. I mean, sometimes I don't speed because not because I think it's wrong, but because I just don't want to get a ticket from the police. Now, I think most of us here would object to someone using their positional power for their own self-interest. Fair enough. But where did we get this idea from? Because the history of humanity seems often to run against this expectation in us. The historian Tom Holland has written a number of fascinating histories of ancient peoples. He's written books about the ancient Romans, the ancient Greeks, the Persians. He's written a book on the origins of Islam. What I like about the way Tom Holland writes is that he makes people come alive. He's not just describing dates and events. He creates a whole picture of people, of an ancient world, an ancient society. He creates pictures of these cultures, shows us how different they are and some of their basic assumptions about how life works. How different they are from us. You know, the Roman emperor's title, the Roman emperor that lived at the time of Jesus, his title was Dominus Deus. Anybody want to hazard a translation? You got good Latin, don't you? Bob?
Not anymore.
It's one of those use it or lose it things. Dominus Deus. Anybody want to hazard a guess? Sarah? What's Deus? Anybody want to guess that?
God.
Dominus.
Dominator.
Yeah, we get the word dominate, Lord, right? Master. Lord God was the title of the emperor in the ancient Roman Empire. And we get the verb to dominate from the dominus, the term dominus. Dominus was technically the head male of a Roman family. He was the absolute leader and ruler of the family. He had total control over the life of everyone in his household, his wife, his mother, his children, his sons and daughters, other family members, slaves and servants. The dominus of the family had the right to avail himself of his wants and desires in any manner he chose. Now, there were certain prescribed cultural taboos and customs that he couldn't cross. They limited him some basic way, but he had complete mastery of every person in his household. And the emperor was the dominus of the whole society. He was the dominus of the whole empire. He was the master of the whole world, the whole known world at the time. And it's into this world that early Christianity came. Tom Holland has written a book called Dominion. And the second title, I've just made it big so you could see it, is How the Christian Revolution Remade the World. A Christian revolution that led to a complete remake of the moral frame for life. It was a fundamental rethink of our relationships. And it was Christianity that overthrew the dominus, the master. It was Christianity that laid the claim to a different understanding of power and the use of power. Christianity overturned the power systems of an ancient world. No longer were those in dominant positions, in positions of privilege, in positional positions of advantage, to use this advantage to gain personal satisfaction or improvement from it only. In Christian understanding, this revolution that overturned the world, this Christian understanding, every person now had dignity and respect because everyone was made in the likeness of God. Everyone was made in the likeness of God. And the exploitation of someone who was made in the likeness of God was immoral and forbidden. Love was to be the central feature of our lives together. In our complete and total love of God, body, soul, mind, and strength, and how we loved our neighbor completely, totally as ourselves. And this is the Christian revolution that remakes the world that Holland is talking about in his book, Dominion. And everything today that we take for granted in Western thinking, human rights, fairness, justice, equity, truth, goes back through Christianity all the way back to Jesus himself. This new understanding of God and of human beings goes back to Jesus himself. Without Jesus, there's no Christian revolution. How could there be? It was Jesus who first taught us that first, to be first is to be last. You know that there are those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. There's that term lord. Dominus. To dominate others. You know that there are those who are regarded as rulers of Gentiles who dominate the lives of others, and their high officials exercise authority over them. They dominate other people. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all, servant of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. Even God did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. It was Jesus who extended the definition of what our neighbor is to include everyone. Up to that point, everyone thought of their neighbor as the person who lived on either side of them or in their little village or maybe even part of their tribe. But in the story of the Good Samaritan, Jesus extends the definition of neighbor to include everyone. Everyone in the world. Including people in my circle and people outside my circle. Outside my tribe, outside my nation. Including even the one I hate most in life. That person is nonetheless my neighbor now. It was Jesus who taught us of the true nature of love, that God is love, and that love is the way of God, the way to God, and the way from God. For God so loved the world that he gave his own one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Paul says in Romans 8, he says it this way, he says, if God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own Son, but gave him up for all of us, will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? I could keep going on and on. Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. From John 8. Jesus didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. He didn't just talk about love, he walked the full path of love. He showed us what love looks like in its fullness in human life. He suffered the full consequences of love's purposes in life on the cross. And Tom Holland says in his book Dominion that a depth charge got dropped in the sea of life. A huge explosion took place in the life and mission and ministry of Jesus. And those waves are still rippling out to us today. We're still feeling powerfully the ripples of his life, his death, his resurrection today. And it all begins by the seashore of Galilee. Today, in the scripture passage, when Jesus walked by four fishermen and invited them to follow him. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. The Christian revolution has so absolutely shaped our world that we just take it for granted. In the same way we just take for granted that the earth is round or that the earth circles the sun. It's just part of the fabric of our basic assumptions about how life should work. It is the way of Jesus Christ that teaches us that what Harvey Weinstein did was horribly wrong. Even for a world that no longer understands its Christian heritage or where its basic values come from, we know this to be true, even if we can't fully explain it. Now, I'll be the first to admit to you that it hasn't worked out perfectly. Hardly. The power systems of sin and selfishness are still there. Sadly, even the church has imitated the world in using its positional power and advantage for itself, instead of using its power and advantage to serve others. I don't want to diminish this truth. We are today in the church in Canada suffering the effects of using sometimes our power for our own advantage. Instead of serving others. We who speak for Jesus sometimes did not necessarily act like him. But just remember that we can only criticize the church or Christian leaders on the basis of the gospel of love that comes from Jesus. The Christian teachings that have come out of it from Paul and others. You won't get a criticism from the Iliad. You won't get a criticism from Greek philosophy. You won't get a criticism from Roman political theory. I don't think Hindu writings will criticize the way of the use of power for oneself. I don't think it's even in the Quran, certainly not in modern secular morality. We criticize the selfishness and self-interest of the church or of those who follow Jesus by the values of the gospel itself. It's the gospel of love that teaches us how to criticize ourselves. The revolution of Jesus is still permeating out into the world. It's still permeating out 2,000 years later. We're still working out the full implications of what he started by the Sea of Galilee with Peter, Andrew, James, and John. He invites those four disciples to follow him. And he's inviting you and me to follow him too on the way of love. Walk with me, he says to them. Walk with me, he says to you and me. Let me show you the better way. Let me show you the only way. Let me show you the way of God. Let me show you God's way. Let me show you the way to show others the way of love. And the Lord in spirit invites us to walk with him today, now, here. Follow me, Jesus says. He's here. Jesus Christ is here in this church with us. We are his ambassadors, his emissaries. We speak for him in life. When people come to us and they see the Lord shining us in us, they see him. And he asks us to follow him, walk with him, to commit ourselves to the way of love with our God, and with our neighbor. Walk with me, Jesus says. Follow the way of love that I have laid out for you, and you too will learn the mystery of what you were meant to do and be.